Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk. With me today are Austin Bay and Jim Dunnigan. Austin is an author, columnist, blogger, and contributor to StrategyPage.com. Jim is a military analyst, consultant for the U.S. military, and well-known author. On Strategy Talk, we discuss current events with our own unique twist. We report news as history.
And welcome this morning. Thought we'd take some time and talk about Russia. They've had a terrorist problem for some time now. How long has that been going on, Jim?
The Chechens have been a problem for Russia for centuries. As the Russians moved south, several centuries ago, they ended up in the Caucasus, and they encountered the Chechens. The Chechens are one of dozens of different ethnic groups in the Caucasus, which is something of a highway, you know, between the Middle East and the Great Plains of Central Asia. And with all the mountains and valleys up there, it's been possible over the centuries for many different, very different ethnic groups to basically grab their own valley and defend it against all comers. The Chechens are one of the larger groups. Actually, the neighboring Ingushetians are very closely related. It's hard to tell them apart unless you're an expert. But the Chechens were unique in that they had basically become professional criminals. I mean, Chechens might disagree with that, but most of their neighbors, and the Russians in particular, will not. They made a great deal of loot by going out and raiding and engaging in various criminal activities against their neighbors. This eventually confronted the Russians with the decision to either tolerate the criminal behavior or we go in there and go and basically pacify them. Well, they've been trying to pacify them for centuries. During World War II, Stalin, who was originally from Georgia, which is the southern neighbor of Chechnya, was so concerned about the loyalty of the Chechens. Their loyalty was always in doubt. As the Germans attacked Stalingrad and actually entered into the Caucasus, that he had them all deported into Central Asia, and many of them died in the process. And they were only let back 10 years later. And at that point, the Chechens had become synonymous with organized crime, because many of them didn't like going to Central Asia. Some of them avoided going to Central Asia, but they couldn't stay in Chechnya. And so the Chechens have had a bad reputation ever since, and they are still at it. When the Cold War ended, the Chechens wanted to be independent, wanted to go back to the original good old days. The Russians said no. The Chechens said, well, what are you going to do about it? The Russians invaded. The Chechens beat them because the Russians went in with their usual local reserve troops and, you know, poorly led, the usual, you know, sob story. Same thing in Afghanistan. And the Chechens drove them right out. The Russians at that point were willing to, you know, give it a try. They pretended that Chechnya was still part of Russia. The Chechens pretended they were an independent state, but they were still getting pensions and other payments from the Russian government. And there were certain other economic activities going on, all very Chechen, as the Russian saying goes. But the Chechens could not govern themselves. There were numerous factions. Nobody was in charge. And one of the factions were Islamic radicals. This was inspired by Al-Qaeda and basically the popularity of Islamic radicalism, world conquest of Islam that had been sweeping throughout the Islamic world since the 1970s, actually. It had gotten a boost in Afghanistan, which inspired the Chechens. They saw Muslims, you know, fighting the Russians, and they said, hey, we should be doing that again. And the Chechen Islamic radicals, they were only one of many factions, decided, well, hey, let's work to set up an Islamic state in the Caucasus. And they started going outside of the Chechnya and basically taking over villages, killing anybody who resisted and telling the rest of them they are now part of the caliphate of the Caucasus. What really bothered the Russians, though, were the criminal gangs. which were kidnapping, armed robbery. There were several thousand people kidnapped and held for ransom in Chechnya. That was a huge problem throughout southern Russia. And there was basically a political uproar. You know, the Russians had something of a democracy at that point. And when Putin came into power, he said, I'll take care of the Chechens. And this is where he really made his bones. This is not recognized outside of Russia. But what really impressed the Russians was Putin went in and he pacified, basically by killing everyone in sight who was holding a gun, Chechnya. And he did what the Russians traditionally did when pacifying Chechnya, after he basically impressed everyone that the Russians were there to stay and they were there to kill anyone who opposed them, including women and children, especially families. He basically turned around and spoke to the largest clans, as it were, and said, all right, who's going to be the guy who's going to be our representative? And they basically held something of an election. And one of the larger clans, more powerful clans, they were then charged with pacifying the other clans and stealing all they could in the meantime. But basically, as long as they kept it quiet down there, they could do whatever they wanted. And that's what's been going on ever since. It's a human rights nightmare, but it's always been that way down there. And it still is.
You know, the interesting thing, Jim, I talked to somebody that we both have an acquaintance with, Dodge, the filmmaker that we...
Oh, yeah, he went over there.
He said the interesting thing was, you know, he went over during the first war, and he felt an affinity to the people because he felt like they were really fighting for their freedom. The second time he went over, he said that those people had completely been wiped out and that they had been infiltrated by the Islamic radicals at that point.
So they were the ones, the Islamic radicals were not open to reason. You know, the gangsters you could make a deal with because, as Don Corleone said, it's business. But when you're on a mission from God, you know, there's only one thing, the mission. And so these people are the most dangerous because they're basically willing to go to Moscow, get on the subway, and blow themselves up.
Now, Austin, you've written recently about this. One of the things that interests me is that really there is just such a small number of Chechens that such a small group can cause this much problem. I guess in Stalin's day, they would have taken them all out.
Well, they did, and they sent them all. There were survivors to Central Asia. There's less than a million of them.
Yeah. Let me make a couple of comments on what Jim said. Then I will get to that column I wrote. And actually, you know, several things we have covered. I want to give a strategy page a plug on this. Really, since fall of 1999, and understand that the apartment war, as it was called, went on in September of 1999 when alleged Chechens, possibly Dagestani terrorists blowing up buildings in Moscow. That's what leads to Putin's statement that Jim alluded to, which is, I'm going to go clean it up. It's where he, Putin actually gets his reputation for being a strongman. The guy can go down there and do that. We've covered this since really the fall of 1999 on strategy page. One of the things that brought the Tsar into the Caucasus region, as Jim was saying, their brigandage. But realize this was also the northern reach of what had been nominally territory under Turkish suzerainty. Just the Turks weren't occupying it and running it, but they had been, to use the Dunnigan word here, the big mockers in the region, and they were also in charge of the nominal caliphate there in Constantinople. And so you had these... You know, the Muslim tribes notionally loyal to the Turks, that the Tsar is not only asserting control, freeing Slavs in Eastern Europe, Bulgarians as an example in the 1870s, but also over coming out, as Jim says, that spine, that connecting spine of mountains between the Near East and the Russian steppes, asserting authority there. Part of the asserting authority is stop the raiding, stop the troublemaking, but there's also the Tsar filling the vacuum of the sick man of Europe, and is also the sick man of that part of Central Asia, and that's the Ottoman Empire. Now, come at the end of the Cold War, there's another vacuum. That's another power vacuum. This time it's the collapse of the Russian Empire under its guise as the Soviet Union. And as you noted from your filmmaking contacts and what Jim said, there were Chechen nationalists. And if you go into comparative grievances, many of these people had absolutely legitimate grievances against the communist government, against what that they saw communist government, against the Russians that had tossed them out of their homes, killed them in mass, impoverished them. And look, Poland's shaking it. Bulgaria's shaking it. Romania's shaking it. Ukraine is shaking the Soviet Union. Georgia's out. The Baltic states are gone. Why not Chechnya as well? And the first Chechen war, I mean, now we've notionally had two. There's some commentators that will say there have been three Chechen wars, but it occurs in 1994. And that's what Jim talked about when they get a sad sack, Russian military force goes in, and the big battle, that first battle of Grozny, which is the Chechen capital, is an absolute disaster for these Russian troops entering in tanks and armored personnel carriers. And the Chechens had set out a very sophisticated trap in the city with anti-tank guided missile RPG armed teams to take the Russian troops and the armored vehicles out, and then destroy them piecemeal throughout the city. And the Russians went right in. And there you have ultimately the deal that's worked out, which is, okay, we say we're in control. And there were Chechens that said, okay, we'll make a deal. We're actually running things here now. And that's there was a political settlement based on convenient political fictions on both sides. But what you see, and as Jim talked about, the history of banditti and brigandage out of the entire region, there were deals made on transportation. In other words, nominally collecting tolls. Others might say it's outright extortion. Even threats against Russian pipeline systems that weren't in the area. Outright, we'll blow them up unless you pay us off. Now, all of that is directly responsible to some of the Chechen clan gangs, but they were certainly involved in it. And then you have the move to assert, whether it's coming from a small group of Islamic radicals that had infiltrated the Chechen rebels, or an attempt to fully separate themselves from Russian control. You enter into this terrible situation that arises in 1999 with what we call the apartment war. Putin and the security services under his direction go in, and as Jim described it, it's a human rights nightmare. But the deal that emerges there is, okay, quote-unquote, we're pacified. But it really didn't stick. You can see subway attacks, I think, in February of 2004. It was a major bomb attack in Moscow. There was also the assault on the school in Beslan. Now, this is clearly with the suicidal faction, the Islamic radical infiltrated component of the Chechen opposition. And Jim, wasn't Beslan in 2004 as well?
What that represented was the success of the counter-terror operations in Chechnya, because it simply chased them into the neighboring areas, Dagestan and Ingushetia, where they were able to basically go up in the hills, make deals with local gangs, and stay in business. And that's what's really kept them going ever since.
Well, but
the ability to adapt and find other bases.
They made a strategic decision, again, though, is that we're taking the war. We're going to take this war into Russia. Whereas we're going to set off these spectacular incidents, spectacular attacks in Beslan was
Well, they also carried out. There was the one spectacular one was they took over the theater and
attack.
And the audience. Yeah.
Yes.
The problem is that the Chechens have always had access to every part of Russia because of their basically criminal connections. Everybody's got a cousin or an uncle or somebody who's mixed up in some gang that smuggles, that runs dope, whatever. And they're still active throughout Russia. They are synonymous with the mafia. I mean, the Russian used the term, the word mafia, for an organized crime, but it's basically, you know, it usually involves Chechens. And this is something that the Islamic radicals take advantage of.
And
even though criminals normally stay away from terrorists because it brings down too much heat. But with Chechens, you're talking about, hey, it's family. It's my cousin talking.
Well, in my view, a lot of things we have seen in Iraq and Afghanistan, there's a crossover between, a convenient crossover between the Islamic terrorists and local criminals. It's not the criminals want to make a deal.
Same thing's happening in Afghanistan.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
The Taliban makes their money with the heroin trade.
Sure.
We reported recently that it's becoming a big problem in West Africa, where the cocaine cartels are flying their drugs across to like places like Guinea-Bissau, and the locals have been bought off. And the Algerians are basically in the last I forget the number, but it's over a dozen. They've been actually ambushing, catching the caravans guarded by Al-Qaeda, known Al-Qaeda operatives, bringing the drugs up to ports in the Mediterranean where they can then move it into Europe.
It's a marriage of convenience with their,
exactly.
Of the divine and the damned at the same time. But to move to the current situation in the column of mine that you were mentioning, I speculated at the end of that column, when it's up in the On Point section of Strategy Page, that we were going to see a third Chechen war. You see, I subscribe to Chechen 1 and Chechen 2. Realize that it's always simmering. There's not a really neat divide, but they are useful at least to talk about the Russian responses to the various Chechen rebellions and the terrorist attacks and the crime, the entire amalgam. And after the bombings on the Moscow subway, Putin is in a situation where, as Jim said, this is what gave him his authority and his presence as a strong leader, which is still a sales item in Russia. I mean, he showed that he had his steel, and Stalin is a man of steel, and that's Ivan the Terrible, another Russian leader of power, and someone you don't cross. Well, Putin has been crossed, and whatever his desires for obtaining the presidency, and that's a possibility, he may decide to run after Medvedev's term is up. This is, in many ways, a challenge to him, even though numerous Russian commentators that I've read say, don't read that in toto, that's part of it, but look at what these guys are up to. The attack on the Lubyanka station is right there by the current Russian Federal Security Headquarters. That's the current name of the old KGB. These guys in Chechnya are very, very, very dangerous. But the component of challenge to Putin recognizes, and both he and Medvedev have promised the severest of responses to the activity out of Chechnya and Dagestan. And I look for I take them at their word. I see them with a high probability, now and in the summer, but as the summer wanes and the classic campaigning season opens, to see a very, very tough response by Russian Interior Ministry troops, police commando units, and the army. I'd be interested in Jim's response to that, but that, as the column goes through analysis and the history, some of which we touched on now, that's where I moved to speculation.
The Russians have no compunctions about going, as I describe it, old school on the Chechens. They basically brush off, you know, the NGOs, Amnesty International. They just do not pay any attention to the human rights, you know, lobby. That means that they will use techniques which, you know, Genghis Khan would recognize, going after families, for example, rounding up, you know, grandmothers and killing them. You know, the Russians, many Russians are appalled at this sort of thing, but basically the people running Russia, you know, Putin, they believe in the old ways, and they basically have the votes because of it. The majority of Russians will at least tolerate this sort of approach to dealing with terrorism. Now, the Russians like to be seen as civilized people, despite, you know, the way they deal with terrorists and terrorism. And that's what a lot of Russians are complaining about right now, is that you cannot be civilized, as it's saying, you know, with these people. And Putin has basically been told to go down there and be uncivilized with the Chechens, and that's basically what he's going to do. And it's hard to report on what exactly they're doing, because they're keeping Western journalists out. They don't want
to be off, Jim,
the rest of the world to report on how they're dealing with their terrorism problem. But it will not, there will not be a war. There will basically be a lot of unpleasant behavior down there. And the real problem the Russians have down there is the corruption. They've too long, even the czars used it, the communists used it, basically got the biggest bug in the neighborhood and said, look, if you can keep things quiet, we basically can do whatever you want. And that really doesn't work anymore because of the internet, because of cell phones, because, you know, the media atmosphere has changed. You cannot hide this kind of stuff in the closet, as it were. The closet has got a transparent door, and they've got a cell phone in there, and the word gets out. But going clean government is something that takes too long. It can take decades, generations, you know, clean up, you know, the kind of the cronyism and clannishness, literally, tribalism that they have down there. And basically the voters of Russia, the people who are getting blown up by these suicide bombers, they want a solution now. So it's going to be ugly. I mean, the word will get out eventually, but, you know, you often won't hear about it for weeks or months later.
Yeah. Now, what sort of spillover effects may this have? Will it draw in more Islamic radicals, or once the word does get out, will it bring more attention to the region?
No, in the 90s, a lot of Arab and other Islamic radicals did go to Chechnya, but they were wiped out when the Russians came back in 99. Since then, for the last decade, Chechnya has largely exported Islamic radicals. They've caught a number of them in Afghanistan. A lot of them showed up dead in Iraq. Most of the ones that were in Iraq have since left. Some have gone back to Chechnya or Russia in general. But most of them apparently have headed for, some have showed up apparently in Somalia. There have been reports of, you know, pale-skinned people down there who were not, you know, from Europe or America or Russia, but from Chechnya. But a lot of them have been showing up in Pakistan and Afghanistan. There aren't that many of them. I mean, you know, this is basically, this is a dead-end profession, an Islamic, you know, terrorist, because too often you have to fight to the death or blow yourself up. So, you know, it's not a long-term career choice. And there aren't that many, but how many does it take? There's probably only a few hundred hardcore who are, you know, really in operations. And the Russians know that if they can wipe them out, they can basically eliminate it for 5 or 10 years. But because you have so many unemployed or underemployed young men, you know, growing up down there, the guys who die are become heroes, folk heroes, and a lot of them say, hey, let's do it, you know, again, like Uncle So-and-so or whatever. And the criminal environment. It's still possible to make money if you're willing to take up a gun and do something you're not supposed to. So you always have that atmosphere where you can basically create more Islamic terrorists. However, with the history of Islamic terrorism, which has been around for over 1,000 years, it tends to come in cycles. And I think it's going to be cycling down. But even if the Islamic radicalism disappears, you know, the Chechen eternal, endless guerrilla war against foreign domination. I mean, they fought the Turks as well as they fought the Russians and all their other neighbors. Will go on until you basically can bring good government, economic opportunity, et cetera, you know, to that part of the world.
Now, Austin, does Russia have other hot spots of Islamic terrorism within their borders?
It's got issues with Islamists. Their deal is they try to work with the locals in whether it's Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan. Remember, these are former part of the Soviet Socialist Republics. They're now separate countries, but it tries to work through their local governments, who also have an interest in keeping the local Islamists under control. Again, there is that curious meshing of local crooks with the Islamic organizations. It's not that the crooks are as crazy as the Islamists, but they see them as an opportunity to make some money. These guys do have sources of funding. I'm talking about the Islamists coming out of the Persian Gulf, out of Islamist supporting charities and the like. And if they can get paid to kidnap and make some money off of that, they're gonna do it. It is a police and a secret service type of problem. That's the way that they treat it. But the biggest Islamist problem that they face is out of the region we've been discussing. Because here's the attractor to it is that they are waging jihad, and Jim's described it too. I mean, a miserable situation of their unemployed young men, their so-called testosterone problem. It's not so-called; it really exists. This demographic group running for men, roughly age of 15 to mid 30s, of unemployed young men with nothing else to do, and the only male glory they can get is to either be a brigand or, my goodness, be a Islamic revolutionary. This is where their biggest problem is. But they get there is an attractive force, both in terms of money and potential recruits, because they're fighting a traditional. They're fighting the Tsarist enemy. They're fighting Europeans. They're fighting the Orthodox. In many ways, but all of these, individually, many of these things I just touched on may sound a bit silly, especially finding the concept of fighting the Tsar and the Orthodox. But there are narratives out there that appeal to these displaced young men that Al-Qaeda and the Chechen, what do they call it, the Emirate of the Caucasus. I think that's the name that they use, and it attracts them. And so this is the hot spot in terms of Islamist threats to Russia.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we'll be talking about Russia and the Chechens again this summer at some point when we get more news out of that area. Appreciate you this morning, gentlemen, and we'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. Bye.
All right.